This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, all about the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host will be joining me shortly is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. He runs the site from SB Nation, also covering the Arizona Cardinals. We're both fans, both natives, and both love the Cardinals, but we also have a twist because we also cover the Cardinals as part of our job, so we have not only a fan perspective, but an inside perspective a little in terms of media. So we're kind of fanalists, analysts, inside-outside perspectives. This is episode 251 of the show, and we've got a good show for you today. It's a day later than normal. We had life come up in normally on our Tuesday night recording. My son, who is a senior in high school, just had his varsity banquet, so because that went till about 10 o'clock at night, we are recording on a Wednesday night instead of the typical Thursday, so it's a day late, but that doesn't make it any, that doesn't make mean the show is any worse. It's worth the wait. So we're going to be talking about in this edition of the show a number of things. We will be dealing with, well, the Cardinals losing to the Pittsburgh Steelers 23-17. Do we feel better about the Cardinals even though it's a loss? We're going to talk about Kyler Murray. What's wrong with him? Because his play has kind of tailed off a little bit. With David Johnson and Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds, we're going to talk about as well how the Roding Dasher rotation. We're going to talk about some new defensive looks that we saw against the Steelers and Tanner Vallejo, the injuries to the defensive line, and look ahead to the Cleveland Browns. So that's what's coming up on this show of this edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast. So let's get ready and get started now. So Seth, welcome to the show again, as always. We've got you on the line. We're going to get started now with, well, do we feel better about the Cardinals after a close loss? So we start off, the Cardinals, instead of getting blown out of the water by the LA Rams, they recover and they lose this game 23-17. Are you more optimistic about this, about the team now after they lost, but a close game, a competitive loss, than you did before the game?
Yeah, I think it's twofold, because you look at the improvement by the defense. Defensively, they only gave up 275 total yards. That's pretty good. They forced two turnovers. You know, that's a good job. They gave up the one big play on special teams. So, I mean, realistically, the defense only gave up 16 points in this game, which is a nice change of pace. I think the caveat with that is obviously that the Steelers are devastated by injuries. They're playing their third-string quarterback, who's a rookie undrafted free agent. And so I think those are the negatives of that, or the slight negatives to the positive outlook of, hey, the defense played better. And then I think the other positive, if you want to make it this way, is, I mean, this was by far Kyler Murray's worst performance outside of the rain fest that was the New York Giants game. And they still had a chance to tie it. They still had a chance to keep it close, and they still had chances to win the game. And so all of that, I would say, in if you take the overview context of this isn't game 14, I would say yes, you're happy that it was a close loss to a nearly a lock playoff team.
And for me, I'm not exactly sure how to feel about this team now. It's different in the fact that after the Rams game, it felt hopeless, like, oh my gosh, we're here again. On Sunday, you're left feeling frustrated. So I don't know if I feel better or not, because while they were more competitive against the Steelers, that Steelers team I don't know what they're, I don't know how they're doing it, but that's the Steelers team that, that shouldn't be competing the way that they are. They've got they've got a kid named Duck for a quarterback. They didn't have James Conner. They didn't have Juju Smith. Their defense is so very good, and their offense is so pedestrian. And so that's a game. And while they're, you know, they're sitting at 8-5, they're kind of in the driver's seat for a wild card. But I, losing close to them still doesn't make me feel better, because there were some issues. Kyler Murray's play, the offensive line play, it all sort of, and the fact that while the yardage was down defensively, they, the defense still made Duck Hodges, and like, look at the passer rating, 117, so that's above their year average of what they're allowing quarterbacks to do. And I get it when you're playing Matthew Stafford, or you're playing Jared Goff and Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, guys that are legit, you know, established veterans in this league. But when Duck Hodges has three incomplete passes the entire game, I don't feel better about that. I feel better about the result, but I don't necessarily feel better about the team, because it feels like while they did improve defensively, they have moved backwards, back to how they were playing in that first month of the season offensively, to me.
Well, and I think there's a twofold thing about that. You brought up the Steelers' talent on defense, and you know, on the message boards on Twitter, you heard a lot of this is why the Cardinals need to invest so heavily on the defense. And yeah, I would agree with that. But I mean, you look at what they've done on defense. I mean, Cameron Hayward is 30, you know, and he's been around forever. Javon Hargrave is in his fourth year. Tyson Alualu is in his, like, 10th year. Stephon Tuitt is finishing up his rookie deal. I mean, it's not like outside of Devin Bush, they're a veteran team on defense where they've invested over 10 seasons, or I would say probably the last – 8 seasons on the defense early and often, but having Ben Roethlisberger allows you to do that. And so the defense is just extremely talented in that sense. The other thing is this: they are phenomenal in two aspects of the game. One, not allowing points, and two, forcing turnovers. They forced the most turnovers in the NFL all season. They've allowed the fifth least amount of passing yards. They've allowed the ninth least amount of rushing yards. And they've only allowed 5 rushing touchdowns all season. So, I mean, the thing is, they don't allow points. And so you look at it, the Cardinals have outscored them on the season. The Cardinals are averaging more points. They have more points on the season. But the defensive disparity, as you talked about, is so big that it still limits the Cardinals' offense, in the sense of they feel, and I think we saw it and we'll talk about it, they feel like they have to score every time they touch the ball. So they're starting to press in a way that, like you said, in that 3-game winning streak and even those losses to the 49ers and Bucks, there was a flow to their offense. There was an efficiency to their offense where they didn't feel an urgency. And now you're seeing them play, and we've seen it all season with Kyler, when they are playing at a frenetic or urgent pace, it's actually when they play at their worst.
Right. And for me, what I kind of feel now is that I would have felt better about this loss had they picked up a win somewhere. Because now they're at 6 losses in a row. The Browns game, while I feel it's winnable, I don't feel confident about. And we're staring at a potential 9-game losing streak to end the year. And in addition to, and we haven't even decided to talk about the whole stadium atmosphere. Fan apathy. It'd be one thing if the Cardinals were being competitive and there was some excitement. Apathy has begun to set in to the fan base again. I had never seen anything like what I saw in that stadium. When I got to the stadium, it was 2 hours before the game. Almost all that I saw was Steelers fans. And then once they got into the stadium, the level of noise that... When Deontay Johnson returned that punt for a touchdown, it might have been the loudest that stadium's been all season.
Well, and it comes back to this is I'm fairly certain this is the worst 2-year stretch in terms of wins in the history of the team. And that's assuming they finish on that 9-game losing streak, as you talked about.
Just remember, if you've been following the Cardinals have a horrific history.
Right. I mean, so
horrific. So leading up to this, is the stat wise, they did not have a winning season. They had one winning season from 1998. I'm sorry, from 1988 until 2008. 2008. So they had one, which they had the 9-7 1988 year. Then they had the 9-7 2008 year. There was never a winning record before that.
In between, no.
And before or after in that time, and they have, I think it was maybe 3-8-8s. And so yeah, in a 20-year period, we've seen bad teams.
And the fact that the Cardinals, I mean, literally they've lost. So I'm looking at their history. They've lost three games only one other time in their history in Arizona, and that was in 2000. and they went 7-9 the next season. So in their four win seasons, they've got two back-to-back 4-win seasons. So that would mean 8 wins. So the Cardinals, to escape this, would actually have to win out to be better than the worst 2-year stretch in Cardinals history in Arizona, which is unfathomable when you make that statement, because as Jess said, it's never, ever been this bad before. But all of a sudden, it's the worst it's ever been. And so when you put it into that context, you begin to see why apathy is setting in, because there's really nothing that fans have to cheer for when you're talking about the worst 2-game stretch in the losingest, or sorry, the worst 2-season stretch by the worst from a win-loss percentage sports franchise in North American history. So to say that this is the worst, and then you're like, but this is the worst franchise. I mean, you have to go back to the 50s when they won 4 games in 2 seasons, and those were 12-game seasons for a worse. So this was, I mean, that's pre-merger. That's pre-St. Louis. I mean, this is when they were still the Chicago Cardinals, that they've never played this poorly before. And so that makes sense as to why you're seeing the apathy set in from the fan base.
And that's, I would feel better about the team. Now, it's not like, you guys know me, if you've listened to this show, I'm always optimistic, and I am still I'm bullish about the future of this team in terms of the talent, because of the quarterback, because of a number of things. I think Cliff Kingsbury is going to be a good coach. I don't know if he's going to be I'm not going to say he's going to be Bill Belichick. He's not going to be some of even a Mike Tomlin, but he's going to be a good coach, and Kyler's going to do great things. However, if they don't, like, coming out of that, I would have felt better about this team if, because they did do better defensively, if they were playing an offense that was even average, and two, if they'd have played better offensively. If they had played better offensively and lost it the way they did, say, against the 49ers, against the Bucs, those type of games, where they were competitive and they were actually playing well, and I get why they played poorly offensively against the Steelers. I get that. I'd feel better about that. But I don't know. we still got that coming up. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to move on and talk about specifically Kyler Murray. What is wrong with him? Because his play has slipped. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Kyler Murray's play is now the topic of discussion because the last, especially in the last couple of games, he's looked more and more like a skittish rookie. And as much improvement in the numbers he's put up this year, he's starting to look like Josh Rosen did sometimes last season, right? What's your take on this?
Well, I think this is simply the result of you're seeing a quarterback that was in a team and really an offense in my mind that was broken after the game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where they played at a high level and it still wasn't enough because of how bad the defense was. And so now you're getting this response, or this, it just looks like the Cardinals offense is playing, like I said, at this panicked, frenetic state that is not conducive to their playing style. When Kyler Murray's at his best is when he's efficient, when he is able to be basically effortless, when he's able, not play from ahead, so to speak, but when he's not having to play pressed or urgent. We've seen the struggles of this team in late game situations when they have to score to tie or win. And when basically he's playing every possession that way, it begins to show the kind of, like you said, the chinks in the armor, so to speak. I think that's really what this is all come down to, is that Kyler has put himself into a position where he wants to succeed and win so badly that he's pressing the issue in ways that he probably normally wouldn't if he had any faith in his teammates. And that's kind of unfortunate, because when he was playing in that freewheeling kind of that dynamic, quick-paced, efficient offense, you saw the way that he could become, kind of a unique and special quarterback that of the likes of which the NFL hasn't seen. And now all of a sudden you're seeing, like you said, a guy that looks like a rookie. I think the bigger thing is, though, this two-game stretch has been by far his worst of his career, and it's resulted in 3 total touchdowns to 4 interceptions, 4 turnovers total. And the team is, still in one of those games in a position to win the game. I would say he was a large part of why they did not win the game, but overall, he still played well enough for his team to pull out a win against the Steelers. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's obvious that there are some issues. I would say, honestly, a lot of it is he's playing with too much pressure on himself, trying to make too many things happen instead of letting the game come to him like he's been so adept at doing early. But I think the other thing is you have to realize is that he's still playing at a pretty good clip when you're considering, a rushing touchdown and an interception and then 2 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, this terrible stretch of games that he's had.
And there is the perception there. And the fact that, the interception, when you look at just the stat line where he threw 3 interceptions, not all interceptions are created equal. So I'm going to take that first one. Joe Hayden made one heck of a play. Now, Kyler, in terms of a throw, he should have thrown that ball a little more inside, especially knowing the reputation of Hayden as being a guy who likes to jump routes. If he throws that ball on the other side to the inside more, Hayden at worst breaks up the pass to Edmonds. And unfortunately, where they were in a position, that's one of those mistakes he can't make because they were in position to score. The desperation interception at the very end of the game, that's an interception, but that was a fourth down and a gazillion yards, and it's a desperation throw. Hopefully something happens. And
yeah, that was almost Hail Mary-esque.
basically, the one that you really, really wish you had back was the interception in the end zone. And that was just a bad decision by him. He had the room to pick up the first down or even score with his legs. And at the same time, there was a moment when the window to Max Williams was open. And I think he didn't say this, but if you look the play over and over again, I think he anticipated TJ Watt stepping up towards him, and he could have thrown it over him, but he didn't. And part of that was because Kyler still had a couple of yards of room before the line of scrimmage. If he'd have waited a half a second more, take another step forward, he draws Watt in and he can throw it over the top of him for the touchdown, and it's a great play. You know, those situations, they lost 6 points at least. They lost at least 6 points because of those two turnovers, which ended up being the difference in the game. Maybe it's more, and they probably win that game. That said, I believe, like, everything that's happening, everything that Cliff Kingsbury said about Kyler, about trying to do too much, I believe it all, because he's playing like those first 3-4 games of the season where he wasn't in rhythm, he just didn't trust what he was seeing in front of him. And here's the other thing. The Rams, let's look at the three worst games that he's had in terms of how he's looked. Carolina, Rams, and then the Steelers. They have some of the most physical fronts, and they've been able to, like, he hasn't been able to get free. Now, on a couple of those plays in particular, when he got beat to the edge, he couldn't beat the guys around the edge when he was scrambling and get down the field. He didn't get any help on one of the first ones. Charles Clay, I don't know what the heck he was doing, and David Johnson completely didn't block a guy on the other one. So he didn't get any help. That said, the losing is wearing on him. He's quite he's emotional. I'm not worried about him, but I wish he were I want to see him play better, because the end of the season, I want to end on a better note for him in terms of performance. And the sacks are coming again because he's trying to do too much. The offensive line isn't playing as well, and the fact of the matter, defenses are doing a little bit more to take the receivers, to take those quick throws away, and the receivers aren't giving him any help.
Yeah, and it's something that you and I have talked about since literally the preseason, where I noted, and I've tweeted this out a number of times, and it's one of the reasons that I've advocated that if they like CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy or any of these guys, I think that's the best decision for their team moving forward, simply because when you watch in on the Watt play, on the there's a play in the first quarter, I believe it was, where one of the sacks, where it was supposed to be a play to the tight end, and Max Williams basically just covers himself by running a terrible route at a very, you know, basically at a snail's pace. And then the article came out, I don't know if it was yesterday or today, I don't really pay attention what day it was, but it talked about how much Kyler Murray has struggled outside the pocket. And it's something that you and I've talked about literally since preseason, that the Cardinals receivers are awful, and I do mean awful, during the scramble drill. What that means is as soon as the quarterback breaks container, breaks the pocket, and now the play is broken down, their routes are not their routes anymore. Now you're working into zones, working back to the ball, trying to create an opportunity for your quarterback to make a throw. It is what we have seen and what we have witnessed firsthand Russell Wilson do for so long for the Seattle Seahawks. And what you're seeing is that the Cardinals are not doing that. Basically, what the Cardinals are doing at this point is when Kyler Murray breaks the pocket, they're stuck on their routes and then they don't move. And it's basically making it impossible for him to make a play. And it just allows the defense to sit in a zone facing Kyler Murray, knowing, okay, Kyler can't take off, but at the same time, he's not going to be able to make any throws because the receivers aren't working back to the ball. And so, like you said, with the Max Williams interception, it was a terrible throw. Like this is 100. That play is 100% on Kyler Murray. But you watch Max Williams on that play. He doesn't work the back of the end zone. He's not running back and forth, and he's not working back to the front of the goal line. He literally stands where his route ends and doesn't move. You watch any of the scramble drills, and that's what you'll see. When Kyler Murray breaks contain, there's never a window for him to make a throw or even attempt to make a throw, which is why he's taken so many of these bad sacks or even ran out of bounds, which results in a sack. Because when he breaks, there's nothing for him down the field to make a play on. And when you watch that, and when you have a mobile quarterback, it is the most important part of having a mobile quarterback is creating that ability and that throwing window for a quarterback to get the ball out on the move. And so the way that it's working for the Cardinals is basically actually making his mobility a detriment to the offense as opposed to something that can help the offense in every situation.
Yeah, they've got to have, and they've practiced this. That's the thing. But we even back in the off season when they were doing OTAs, they worked on the second phase of, and it's having a system. You have to have a system in place for the chaos of broken down plays, and Seattle's really good at that. Their receivers over time have been great about doing that, and that's what makes, you know, if you have to make defensive backs cover for 6-7 seconds,
it's impossible.
The offense should win every time. That's the fact of the matter of the NFL. If you make a defensive back cover for more than 3 seconds, it should mean that your offense wins. That should happen every time.
Yeah, and so it's just been frustrating to watch the entirety of it because the Cardinals, you would think with all their investments and all everything that they've kind of put towards the offense that they would have more for it. And in the end, what they have is just a lot of guys running around. And so if the window's not open, it's this situation where Kyler is maybe creating space and then there's nothing for him to do with the ball. And so it's not the Seahawks. It's not even the Ravens where he is creating a window to throw into. Basically what's happening is there's no window for him to throw into and there's no chance for him to make a play when he does escape the pressure. And that causes these either forced throws or these self sacks that we've seen. And that gets people irritated. That gets the offensive line irritated. But at the same time, I mean, when you look at the whole play, you have to understand what the quarterback's seeing in real time. And when you're saying that there's nobody working back to an open space or the ball, the quarterback's got to make a decision now. And what he's been told basically is you need to make sure that you're taking care of yourself and that you're not taking unnecessary hits in these situations, and that is kind of where they're at right now. And let's be honest, there's no more unnecessary hit at this point than Kyler Murray getting hit during a 3-8-1 or 3-9-1 season, right. Trying to pick up a first, and he actually did that later in the game, because you can see that the competitiveness and that drive that you talked about is kind of seeping through, where he's like, I can't do this anymore. I've got to push the envelope a little bit. And so, I mean, just that's what you're seeing right now. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but at the same time, it's been, you know, it's been what I believe is the result of, you know, the poor play. Again, when you take it into context, poor play, that he still found a way to produce three touchdowns is not awful, but poor play for what he's shown us that he can be as a player.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about the running back situation, because, David Johnson, he played well, but he didn't play very much. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The running back situation is quite interesting. Kenyon Drake, since his fantastic debut against the 49ers, has really been kind of pedestrian. And yet, David Johnson still does not see an increase in playing time. He had 5 touches, but he played well. 3 carries for 19 yards. His carry, he looked good running the ball. He had his 2 catches for 34, including the 24-yard touchdown reception. David Johnson played better. Kenyon Drake also made some plays. Chase Edmonds made a play in special teams, only saw a handful of snaps. So we've seen Kenyon Drake. What should be the situation? What should the Cardinals be doing with the running back situation right now?
I'm not sure if there's an answer to what they need to be doing, because the running backs in general haven't, you know, been exactly what we had hoped they would be this year. There's been some issues. And so what's going on at this point is that you're seeing where Cliff and probably Kyler are comfortable more so than anything else. I think they're also looking for the guy that's going to run the ball the hardest consistently. And so far that has been Kenyon Drake. Not that Chase Edmonds wasn't running hard, but I think that the fact that he got injured in a short amount of time as the main ball carrier kind of created this instance where they're maybe not comfortable having him be out there being the guy, so to speak.
For me, you know, there's clearly something up with the David Johnson situation. On Wednesday, the door was cracked a little bit. Now, everyone has seen by now the tweet that he posted. It's the image of him in the end zone scoring the touchdown, and the fans are full of Steelers fans. And there's this quote about having the enemy all around him, that he's going to stand tall. We saw the Tyrann Mathieu response to that, and, you know, a ton of speculation led to that. Oh, who are his enemies? Some say, oh, it's just the fans. He gives this explanation, and it makes sense. This explanation makes sense. He saw the picture, and it reminded him of apparently this lyric from this Christian rapper. I can't confirm, I don't know anything about Christian rap. And so he quoted that with the picture, and he's been posting about on social media about detractors and doubters and coming back and being strong. That said, he even admitted he's not happy with his role right now. That's part of being a competitor, and no one should be. He's used to being a workhorse. He's been a feature back since the end of 2015, and now he's had that role reduced. He's been embarrassed. He played in a game and didn't get a single touch when he was basically on the field a handful of plays and healthy and didn't get that. And there is a disconnect between him and the coaching staff. We know that there is. He admitted as such. He's been talked to, so he's had a conversation with the coaches. They've explained why his playing time has gone down. He doesn't agree with it, and he's going to keep that conversation private. Kingsbury has not said anything negative about Johnson. However, you know, maybe coaches play who they think will be, like, unless they're being told and they're being mandated from the executives in the front office to play certain guys, he is playing the guys that he trusts. Clearly, he trusts Kenyon Drake more for whatever reason. And I'm reading between the lines, and I've said this a couple of times. I believe the disconnect has to do with something to do with practice habits. Because every time they talk about Chase Edmonds, when Chase Edmonds' role increased while David was healthy, it was Chase earned those reps in practice. Kenyon Drake, Cliff has been very complimentary about his worth, the way he's just gone after it. So clearly, what I see with this, and the fact that when David Johnson has his quote-unquote best week of practice this year and it didn't earn him any touches in a game, means there's something about practice habits. Maybe it's the comfort in the offense. Maybe he doesn't go hard enough. Maybe the fact of the matter is in practice he was too comfortable because he knew what his role was and he didn't try as hard. And then that translated on the field to being uncertain, running without the same authority or the comfort level. And I think that's what has happened. The problem is we've now seen 5 games of Kenyon Drake, and his 5-game sample, the last 4 games have not... They are no better. In fact, they are a little less statistically than David Johnson's 6 games before he got hurt. When honestly, David Johnson was number 10 in scrimmage yards before he got hurt. And when looking forward, who do you play? If you're looking at all to the future, you've got David Johnson under contract. Do they know they want Kenyon Drake back? If they know they want Kenyon Drake back, okay. They know he's going to be a part of the future. That's fine. Keep going with him. But David's part of the... Unless... Like, David's stuck... You're stuck with Johnson, so you need to get him right. And it doesn't make sense to have a $10 million running back that is a... That's playing Chase Edmonds' role.
Yeah, and that's the interesting part right now, is that they've basically relegated David Johnson to being a part-time bit player, kind of the receiving back. But I think there's a twofold process to this. I think the first thing is they had high expectations for him coming in this year. And one of the biggest complaints that we all had about David Johnson was his lack of urgency, I guess, would be the right word, since that's the word of the day. Urgency when he was running the football. He was very methodical. He was kind of plodding. He wasn't running with any authority or with that kind of decisiveness that you need in this offense, where the zones are closing quickly, but they are there. You know, the Cardinals have graded very highly as a run blocking team thus far. And so I think one of the things that did was that maybe, I don't know, I don't want to speak out of context, but I think it sent a poor message early to Cliff and the coaching staff of, this is a guy that there is, I mean, probably no one on the offense had higher expectations than David Johnson. I mean, outside of maybe Kyler Murray, and to see him maybe not running as hard as he potentially could, or maybe not being as decisive or aggressive as they would like him to be, maybe he is running hard, but it's not what they wanted to see. I think that's why you've seen this kind of situation and result thus far. I think the other thing is, and it's been something that we've talked about, it came up under Bruce Arians. It came up under Mike McCoy, and I wonder if it's coming up now under Cliff Kingsbury, is that when David is not the focal point or the guy to get the ball, there's been concerns about his effort level and understanding of what he's being asked to do. We remember last year against the Bears when he was pulled at like the most inopportune time with a rookie quarterback on the field because he messed a blocking assignment up. There was a number of times. Who was it that would replace him under Arians that we just didn't understand because he knew how to block better? I can't remember who the back was. But so you wonder if it's the same situation here now with Cliff Kingsbury. And like you said, if it has endeared Kenyon Drake or Chase Edmonds a little bit more to Kingsbury because they are true three down back type guys, as opposed to maybe David Johnson not being a guy that they trust to block or you know, take on situations that don't include running the football.
Yeah, Stephon Taylor might have been the guy. I can't remember. It was Stephon or I don't know.
It was somebody.
Inconsequential now. The last three games, who do you want to see getting the ball more? I think at this point, at minimum, it needs to be a split workload. Unless they've already made their decision about David Johnson, in which, heaven help us, if they plan on moving that contract, because that is a black eye. I mean, that in itself might be a fireable offense for Steve Keim after some of the contract issues. But you can't just move on from who, like, he's supposed to be the face of the franchise, right? That's what was supposed to happen. He was supposed to be the guy to be the face of the offense after Larry Fitzgerald, and now you're just relegating him to the big. But I need to see them splitting time. I think Cliff did a good job of incorporating him. I want to see more. I still think he's the best running back on the roster. I still think he's the best playmaker on the roster, and you've got to give him, you need to give him his touches. I know you've got to earn him, but his games where he's had more touches, he's been more productive, and that's what I see. And the struggles in the running game, when he's gotten more carries, he's done better. And maybe it was he was doing better, and that's why he got more carries, but I don't know. The whole running back situation is frustrating, and it's clear that he's unhappy with his role, and I don't want that to poison anything, per se.
Yeah, and I mean, it's unfortunate that that's where it's come down to, because you feel like he's a... this is a guy that could have, you know, like you said, been the kind of the next guy for this team, but it seems like every time they've tried to find that next guy, it's kind of blown up in their face. So, you know, I don't really have a preference. I just want whoever's going to be the best moving forward. And so if it is, you know, if it is David Johnson, if they have a role for him, then, you know, go towards it. If it is Kenyon Drake and they're planning on bringing him back and kind of making him the focal point, then go for it. Like, that's my biggest thing, is like, I don't really want any half measures at this point. I think you need to prioritize next season and prioritize, as you said, under the Kyler situation, going into next season feeling really positive about where you're headed in terms of your future.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about some of the defensive looks the Cardinals gave and a surprise big performer, Tanner Vallejo. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. On Sunday, perhaps the best player on defense was Tanner Vallejo, who played 16 snaps, 5 tackles, a sack, a quarterback hit, a tackle for loss, and a forced fumble. Did you see that coming?
It's one of those situations that you and I have talked about on this podcast, maybe not with, you know, with Vallejo in himself, but referring especially to Hassan Reddick, about the comfort level of seeing what your eyes are showing you. And when you talk about inside linebacker, outside of quarterback, maybe no position is more about what you see than inside linebacker. Because with safeties, I mean, maybe free safeties, if you're playing a true single high cover one, you have to really trust your instincts and what you're seeing in front of you. But with linebacker, you have keys that you have to read. You have situations that you are used to seeing unfold, and then you're supposed to go make those plays. That's what Tanner Vallejo's done since he was in Pee Wee football. On the flip side, Hassan Reddick has never done it. And so you just see the difference in a guy that trusts his eyes and instincts versus a guy that's never done it and a guy that's still trying to get comfortable in what he's seeing and reacting to. And so Vallejo's 16 plays were probably better than the best 16 plays of Hassan Reddick this season at inside linebacker.
Absolutely.
And that's just simply because Vallejo trust what he sees. He's done it again probably since he was in peewees, and so it's just a natural thing for him. It's something that he's comfortable seeing, reading, and reacting, where you're still seeing the hesitation and the uncertainty of Hassan Reddick.
I found it interesting because the Cardinals actually gave some different defensive looks than they've had all year. Up until last week, they basically have had a base package with their 3-4. They've had a nickel. They've had a speed nickel where they go with one down lineman and 3 outside linebackers, so 3 edge players for more pass rush. They have a goal line, but basically, they haven't strayed from those 3 main packages all year. We saw something different on Sunday. When the Steelers went with 3 wide, they sometimes stayed in base. They also offered a new one, which actually was, if I find this fascinating because I kind of chart the plays as I go just to look at playing time and trends, a 3-5 defense. So normally they run 3-4 or 2-4 or 1-5. This was 3-5. And they kept they added Tanner Vallejo and took one of the cornerbacks. They took Byron Murphy off the field, giving them only 3 defensive backs. And then they swapped out Jalen Thompson for the much more physical Chris Banjo, a guy that they bring in as a safety at the goal line. Very interesting to see them do that, and I think that might have been a single game plan because of the formations the Steelers use. But it'll be interesting to see if they bust out those rotations or if Vallejo gets any more time than he had, because Joe Walker has been pretty good in base. Now he's playing nickel. I don't think Vallejo's any better in coverage as we saw in the preseason. But it'd be interesting to see what he does and what role he plays moving forward.
Yeah, and, you know, Vallejo is a guy that has been around the NFL, and he's never really gotten a chance as more than a special teams guy. And so maybe this is the system that he needs and the opportunity he needs to kind of break out at this point. You know, when you talk about the defense, I think it's one of those situations where you go, it's about time, right? Like, you just feel like, where was this willingness to try something different for the first time? And why wasn't this something that was done earlier in the season? I think a lot of it was necessitated by all the injuries we've seen, because now Rodney Gunter and Jonathan Bullard are both done for the season. It's a situation where this team feels like it's being held together with duct tape at this point, right? Like, this is not a team that you expected. I mean, you just wrote about it. Six of their top seven defensive linemen are now done for the season. And, you know, it's hard to win games in that way. But at the same time, I think it's been a good revelation to see this turnaround in terms of finally being willing to kind of maneuver and change your schemes and playing to the talent you have. It's something that we've talked about with Cliff Kingsbury. You know, he started the season wanting to go into a lot of, 10 personnel, which is, you know, four wide receivers and just one running back. And he was willing to change that simply because he didn't have the talent around, or he didn't have the talent to do so. So now you're seeing, you're seeing more 12 personnel. You've seen some, 22 personnel, two backs, two tight ends. You've seen, we saw 31 personnel, three running backs and a tight end.
Yeah, we had 30.
Yeah. So I mean, we're seeing the evolution of Cliff Kingsbury, and we've seen that all season, and we haven't seen it from the defensive side of the ball. So it's just nice to finally see it, even if it was kind of forced on them.
Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about those defensive line injuries, what that's looked like, and kind of what it's meant. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Seth prefaced it a little bit. The Cardinals have had a lot of injuries on the offensive. So 2016 to 2018, they were just absolutely devastated by injuries on the offensive line, going through tackle after tackle after guard after right tackle after right tackle. This year, the offensive line has been quite durable, with the exception of right tackle, where we rotated through a couple because at the beginning of the year. Defensive line, though, this might be... Obviously, we had the issue of losing Robert Alford, Patrick Peterson getting suspended, but if we want to point to an area on the defense which might be the cause of some of their problems, it's the fact that their expected contributors and starters have all disappeared. Six different players that were either starters or expected key contributors this season are either off the roster or on injured reserve, and that dates back to the preseason. It started with Darius Filon, probably the biggest loss of the season because he was looking good. He was going to anchor that interior. He got, he decided to pull a weapon allegedly and on a stripper outside of a club. I don't know. He got cut. Robert Kimdichie, he wasn't expected to do anything at the beginning of the year. He was never going to be available till about the second half of the season. But it was very clear he had no interest in playing football. Fat and out of shape, he got cut. So he was expected to be a contributor late in the year. Then you go to Zach Allen. He's thrust at the starting lineup, even when he wasn't expected to be a starter to begin with, but he was expected to be a key part and productive part of that defense. He has the stinger. He ends up on injured reserve after missing, 10 ball games or whatever, 8 ball games, and then they finally put him on injured reserve. Clinton McDonald ends up on injured reserve. Jonathan Bullard plays only 9 games. He played well in those 9 games, but he had a foot injury that caused him to miss a couple games, and he comes back healthy, messes the hamstring up, he's done for the year. And now it's Rodney Gunter. So 6 different players, and that's not even to mention the guy that we were surprised, Terrell McClain, who was cut in the preseason. We thought he was going to be in it for whatever reason. I didn't even count him. So 6 or 7, that's basically an entire defensive line room of a team that you're expected to have. That was like the whole rotation, and they're gone.
Yeah, and so now you're just sitting here, you're hoping that they can get through, the rest of the season. They're talking about moving Terrell Suggs down in situations and getting Hassan Reddick on the field.
Wise
in pass rushing situations, it's just it's one of those situations where there's definitely been issues. You've definitely seen the negatives, and they're easy to spot. But at the same time, you feel bad is not the right word, obviously, but you just you feel for the team because you really had hoped that this would be this would not be an issue, and instead it's become a huge issue without the ability to kind of take advantage of depth at a spot like defensive line, and instead you found that it's basically an issue of now you're lacking talent and now you have nothing on the back end that can help either. So basically what you're finding is that you have no depth on the front end and you lack talent on the back end, and that's like the worst possible combination of things to have, because now all of a sudden you just have you're just hoping to get enough from Chris Banjo or Tanner Vallejo, or you know, now it'll be, you know, Zach Kerr and
Caron Reed is who yeah. was unemployed before a week ago,
and Miles Brown, who is
he's a starter. Caron Reed's a starter. He wasn't right. on an NFL roster a week ago.
And Miles Brown is a guy they really liked, and they were worried about cutting because they liked him in a year or two as he, you know, got a little stronger and adapted to the game. Like, this is where they're at, and that's the hard part to, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's hard to blame Vance Joseph for that. When you want to start, you know, putting blame on two individuals or situations. However, there's never an okay or acceptable way to have the worst defense in the NFL. And this, so that's what it boils down to. It's like, okay, so you either are okay having the worst defense in the NFL or you're not. And so even though you have a bad defense, again, let's go back to the Steelers. And I know this is comparing apples and oranges, but they are missing James Conner, Juju Smith-Schuster. They were missing Marquise Pouncey for two games.
Vance McDonald suffered a concussion in the game.
Yeah, they've been without Ben Roethlisberger since game one. And they have 8 wins. Now, I'm not saying that the Cardinals have as much talent on the defensive side of the ball as the Steelers do on offense, because the Steelers still have a, you know, near elite offensive line. However, they're missing 3 to 4 of their most important players, and they're still finding ways to win games. The Cardinals are not missing. I mean, they have Chandler Jones. They have Patrick Peterson. They're not missing their two best defensive players, and they're still the worst defense in the NFL. And so it comes back to this idea of, is it the scheme, or is it the talent, or is it just the worst possible combination of both situations?
Yeah, it really is. But we'll continue to do about it. Coming on to the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talking about, we're going to wrap the show up. We're going to look ahead to the Browns. Cleveland Browns coming to town. Baker Mayfield versus Kyler Murray. Baker Mayfield versus Cliff Kingsbury. Steve Wilkes revenge game. We'll talk about that coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The Browns are coming to town. A Browns team that they are disappointing, yet definitely in a better place than the Cardinals. They have a lot of talent, and they've got a defensive coordinator with an axe to grind, I'm sure. What do you expect from this game? What do you expect in this weekend? Because the Browns, they're a beatable team, but then you look at it, it was Baker Mayfield will turn the ball over. He gets sacked. But they have a very good running game. They've got very good receivers in Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry. What are the Cardinals? How do the Cardinals match up with this team?
I don't think they match up well because their strength lies in their aerial arsenal. At least it should. And the Cardinals' worst attribute is defending the pass. And so it really is this unfortunate idea that the best strength of the Browns is the Cardinals' biggest weakness. The Cardinals are going to have to create unrelenting pressure on Baker Mayfield, force him to make poor decisions and kind of take away his security blanket. That is the only way that you're going to see them have success. Other than that, it's going to be a situation where it's just going to be another unfortunate long game where maybe hopefully Kyler Murray is better and does enough to keep the offense, you know, the Cardinals in the game, and hopefully the defense can come out with one or two stops. But this is an offense that's underachieved all year, and the danger to that is that we've watched when underachieving offenses come in, they tend to play very well against the Arizona Cardinals. And so that's what the concern becomes, is that will the Cardinals be again another kind of get right game? We saw it for Jared Goff, and all of a sudden he's playing out of his mind. You know, like you broke down the duck. I mean, he had a really good game against the Cardinals where there was very little resistance defensively when he wanted to throw the football. I mean, think about the 3rd and 18 kind of play of the game, and it was an easy pitch and catch with a fellow rookie in Deontay Johnson, and you're just going, really? I mean, really? 3rd and 18, and you can't even, like, feign interest to get a stop? And so I think that's what the concern is that the Browns' offense has had those two or three good games. I mean, they looked like a contender when they just blitz the Browns in what, week 3 or 4, but since then they haven't done that quite as much, and you haven't seen what everybody expected to see. And to me, that's the concern, because you have consistently been a get right game for teams that are struggling.
I'm interested in this game because best case scenario, result wise, I'm not focusing on the result. We saw the Cardinals defensively do what they wanted to do against the Buccaneers. They got pressure. They got to Jameis Winston. They forced turnovers, and they still managed to lose the game. That said, and the offense played very well in that game as well. This game, I hope, is a game like that. Baker Mayfield will throw you the ball. Baker Mayfield will get sacks. If the Cardinals can get sacks and force a turnover or two, then it's going to be on the offensive side of the ball. And luckily, we know a lot about a Steve Wilks defense. They're pretty good against the pass. This is a game where they're going to have to, Cliff Kingsbury is going to really have to focus on the running game, because the Browns are not very good against the run. They're not good against the run this year, just like the Cardinals were bad against the run a year ago. But they are pretty good against the pass. This is the perfect game for the offense also to kind of get it right. Because what have the Cardinals done best when have they been the best offensively is when they're able to have balance, when they're able to incorporate the running game. You get Kyler Murray moving a little bit, you get the ball to David Johnson, to Kenyon Drake, and then everything else opens up. They might not get the big plays down the field. Steve Wilks' defenses are pretty good about protecting down the field. But if what I want to see is a game in which the offense plays like it did against Tampa Bay, and the defense as well, minus if it can come down to a last possession. Those are the type of games I was expecting this year. I was expecting high-scoring games from both sides of the ball, and that would be, going back to the first topic, do we feel better about this team? If they lose a 30-27 game to the Browns, I'm going to feel better about this team because I don't have many expectations when it comes to defense. But if it's a 30-27 game, that's the type of game I wanted the Cardinals to be playing all year.
Yeah, and so if that's what they're able to do, if they're able to get that balance that they've been lacking so severely the last couple of weeks, if they're able to get the running game going again, which, again, brings pressure off of Kyler Murray and allows them to be multiple in their offensive sets and decisions, I think that's the best-case scenario for them. And then all of a sudden you feel like this team can put up some points and, like you said, be competitive. And that's really where – you and I kind of lie in this whole season is like, yeah, you and I were hoping for 6 or 7 wins, but we also understood that 6 or 7 wins that were kind of those fluky things is not as important as one of the sides becoming a strength of this team. And then you're able to kind of fix, hopefully, the other side. Having two bad sides of the football is just a recipe for a 5-6 year tailspin that none of us want to be a part of.
Exactly. I'm excited to watch a couple of matchups. I can't wait to see Patrick Peterson and Odell Beckham. I think if we want to see if they plan this right, if Vance Joseph's doing his homework, this is the game where Patrick probably should have his best game. He's got it. Because he played well against Mike Evans when he was asked to man him up and press him. He did. He played well against Mike Evans. I hope he can play well against Beckham. And then I want to see Byron Murphy against Jarvis Landry. Byron's not been playing all that well. But you can scheme around that some. But those are two matchups I'm excited to see because they're highly productive. And if Byron can make a couple plays, it'll make me feel better about what he's got moving forward. I want to see defensively, there's kind of three guys. It's Chandler Jones, it's Patrick Peterson, and it's Byron Murphy.
Yeah, and I think you want to see a big game from Chandler. But I think offensively, for me, I want to see the balance we talked about. I want to see another 150-yard rushing game and then a 300-plus-yard passing game to go along with that. If you can get around 400 total yards of offense and you're moving the ball well, I think that they're going to be in a good position to have a chance to win this game. I'm not going to say they're going to win this game because I don't know if they're going to win any games the rest of the season.
I've predicted a 30-27 Browns win. If it ends up being that way, I'll be disappointed, but I will feel better about the Cardinals in the last two games. I think the last two games are going to be, I don't know, like maybe they can go up for those games, but the Rams just have the Cardinals number and the Seahawks have a lot to play for right now. So I don't expect much more than that.
Because, I don't know what Seattle's schedule is, and I know we'll get to that next week, but you're right. Like this is... Yeah, the Seahawks play the Panthers, but it's in Carolina, so who knows, really. But, I mean, the Seahawks could be fighting for their playoff life in that game. So we may not get the ho-hum that we were hoping for. So it may be that game where you're trying to just keep pace with what is a Seahawks team hell-bent on making the playoffs.
And with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of C-Red podcast. We'll be back again next week after we'll be able to break down the Browns game, look ahead to Seattle, and looking forward to see who played well, who didn't play well. Maybe we'll see more from Hassan Reddick. Maybe David Johnson will do better. We'll talk about that in a week. But thanks for listening, always. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise of C-Red podcast, and always, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.
Roll!